Chapter 13. Fabius began with that most ancient of interrogation techniques, the unveiling of his many devices of excruciation and explaining of the purposes to which they would be put. They ranged from mundane artifacts, such as any fashioner of metal or wood might employ, hammers, needle-nosed pliers, nails, welding torches, awls, planes, and slow-bit drills, to more exotic implements of suffering. Nerve splicers, organ liquefiers, chakra inflamers, marrow augers, and brainstem impellents.
"This last device is one that will give me great pleasure to use," said Fabius,
unhooking a number of metal barbs into Fulgrim's spine. The gurney upon which Fulgrim lay had rotated about its long axis, revealing flagellated shoulders and a back that was a corrugated landscape of scar tissue and healing weals. Lucius saw an admirable devotion in the Primarch's flesh, a single-minded pursuit of pleasurable agony that only the true devotee of pain could attain.
"What is this, and what does it do?"
asked Caesaron. Fabius smiled, pleased to be able to elaborate on his tool of suffering.
"It is a neural parasite I have engineered from gene-spliced Xenos brain fluids and nanotech recovered from the Diasporex hybrid captains."
"That doesn't answer his question,"
snapped Marius. Fabius nodded and tapped a long-nailed finger on the back of Fulgrim's skull. Lucius frowned at the gesture, the implications of detachment altogether too complete. To Fabius, Fulgrim was simply another piece of meat upon which he could work his biological conjurations. The outcome of this betrayal would decide the future course of the Legion, but it was already simply a means to uncover some new biological quirk and a test of a new invention. Lucius's feelings towards Fabius went from dislike to hate. Fabius lifted an artifact that looked like the rear portion of a battle helm and turned it around in his hands. Thin spikes jutted from one side, each hooked to an array of injector shunts loaded with glittering silver fluid that rippled like expectant mercury.
"Once placed upon the subject, nanofluid is introduced to the subject's body, whereupon it latches onto the brainstem and follows the neural pathways into the brain. The various Xenos species employed in the creation of the serum were possessed of enhanced psychic potential, and the invasion of the brain chemistry allows the manipulator of the device to access any area of the brain and stimulate it as required."
"To what end?" asked Lucius, though he had a good idea.
"All things mortal are simply engines,"
said Fabius.
"Mechanical animals of flesh and blood, but driven by essentially mechanistic imperatives. What we mistake for personality and character are simply expressions of response to stimuli. With a complex enough algorithm, it would be possible to exactly replicate a functioning machine persona that would be indistinguishable from a living creature. Knowing this, we can stimulate certain areas of the brain, enhancing whatever aspects we choose while blocking others. I could dash the brains of a newborn infant against the wall in front of its mother, and this device would see her delirious with ecstasy, should I so choose. Or I could lightly touch a man's chest and make him believe I was tearing his heart out with my bare hands."
"Then why the need for the other devices?"
asked Caesaron.
"As much as this device can make a man believe he is burning to death without so much as a spark being near him, there is a certain pleasure to be taken from a simpler approach to pain,"
admitted Fabius.
"On that, at least we agree," said the first captain.
"So what are we waiting for?"
demanded Verosian.
"Let us begin and be done with this."
Fabius gave a slow nod and rotated the gurney around once more, Fulgrim's face was ruddy, and Lucius could see he relished the prospect of their attempted rescue of the soul whose body he had stolen.
"I remember that device," said Fulgrim.
"Do you really believe it'll work on a being like me? My consciousness is an order of magnitude greater than yours. It functions in realms beyond anything you can comprehend. Its upper limits so great, they cannot be contained purely in a cocoon of bone, and must exist in realms which only gods can access."
"We shall find out," said Fabius,
insulted that his genius was being impugned.
"Start with that one,"
ordered Caesaron.
"If we are successful, there must be a perfect body into which Fulgrim can return."
"My sons, you have been led to this like sheep to the slaughter," said Fulgrim. "Lucius brings you an idea that generates a flicker of interest in your dull lives, and you seize it as a golden lifeline, just so you can actually feel something. Have you learned nothing since our ascension? Nonconformity in thought and deed is the only vital life. Brotherhoods are for sheep minds, and heresy is godly." "Enough talking," said Lucius,
snatching up a set of bladed pliers and sliding them over the middle finger of Fulgrim's right hand. With one swift, even pressure, he severed the finger at the middle knuckle, and a squirt of blood pulsed from the wound before slowing to a drip. Fulgrim howled, but whether it was in pain or pleasure, Lucius could not tell. Fabius snatched the pliers from Lucius with an angry scowl.
"Excruciation is a precise and meticulous art, a stepped pyramid of pain," he said. "To randomly cut and maim is the work of amateurs. I will have no part in such butchery."
"Then stop talking and get on with it," said Lucius, "because it sounds to me like you're stalling."
"The swordsman has a point," said Caesaron,
looming over the apothecary. Clad in his Terminator armor, Julius dwarfed Fabius, and the apothecary nodded in acquiescence.
"As you will it, first captain," said Fabius,
turning to his instruments.
"We shall begin with the pain of fire."
Lucius felt his pulse race as Fabius lifted a cutting torch from the bench, snapping the igniting mechanism three times before the flame caught. Used to cut through sheet steel, the flame sharpened to a cone of blue-hot light as Fabius adjusted the gas flow. Julius Caesaron leaned over Fulgrim and said,
"This is your last chance, demon spawn. Get out of my Primarch's body and you need not suffer."
"I welcome suffering," said Fulgrim with bared teeth.
Caesaron nodded, and Fabius brought the flame down on the sole of Fulgrim's foot. The flesh curdled, running like molten rubber as it withered beneath the incredible heat. Fulgrim's back arched, and his mouth stretched wide in a soundless scream as the veins and sinews at his neck lifted from his skin like colliding tectonic ridges. Lucius watched bone rise from the melting skin as it peeled back, emerging white and gleaming for an instant before turning black. Marrow burned with a rich, fatty hiss, and the scent of seared flesh was a rich, gamey texture in the back of the throat. Lucius had smelled and tasted human meat before, but compared to that poor feast, this was an Epicurean delight. He saw the smell was having a similar effect on the others. Caesaron's molten features softened their hard edges, and Verosian held himself upright only with an effort of will. Only Fabius appeared unaffected, but Lucius guessed he had already savoured many sights and smells of a Primarch's body in his explorations of its divine biology. Fabius played the flame over Fulgrim's foot until all that remained below the ankle was a blackened mass of fused bone and boiled marrow that drooled to the tiled floor of the apothecarian. Julius Caesaron took hold of the charred bone.
"This suffering can all end,"
he said, regaining his composure with remarkable swiftness. Lucius licked his lips, still savouring the wondrously rich and flavoursome taste of Fulgrim's seared flesh. Fulgrim looked up at Caeseron with a taut smile and said,
"Suffering? What do you know of suffering? You are a warrior who fights where I tell him to fight, a tool to achieve my desires, nothing more. You do not suffer, and should not speak of it to those who do."
"I choose not to suffer," said Caeseron. "A man can be strong enough to master his feelings, so that it is impossible to make him suffer. To suffer pain and indignity is a loss of control. It is to admit to human weakness. I am strong enough to deny suffering."
"Then you are a bigger fool than I took you for, Julius," said Fulgrim. "Where do you think strength comes from, if not suffering? Hardship and loss is what grants you strength. Those who have never known true suffering cannot have the same strength as others who have. A man must be weak to suffer, and by that suffering, he will be made strong."
"Then you will be made mighty when we are done with you,"
promised Verosian. Fulgrim laughed.
"Pain is truth," he said. "Suffering is the sharp end of the whip. Not suffering is the end of the whip the master holds in his hand. Every act of suffering is a test of love. And I will prove this to you by enduring all the pain you can inflict upon me. Because I love you all."
"These are not Fulgrim's words," snapped Caeseron.
"They are honeyed lies to weaken our resolve." "Not true," said Fulgrim. "All the truths I have learned since taking the life of my brother have shown this to be indisputable. All things in this grand universe are linked to one another by invisible threads, even those things that appear as opposites."
"How can you know that?" said Lucius. "Lord Fulgrim was a lover of beauty and wonder, but he was hardly a philosopher."
"To be a lover of beauty and wonder, one must be a philosopher of the heart," said Fulgrim, with a disappointed shake of his head.
"I have gazed into the secret heart of the warp, and know that all existence is a struggle between opposites. Light and darkness, heat and cold, and, of course, pleasure and pain. Think of ecstatic pleasure and unimaginable pain. They are connected, but they are not the same thing. Pain can exist without suffering, and it is possible to suffer without feeling pain."
"Agreed,"
said Caeseron.
"But what is your point?"
"What you can learn from pain, that fire burns and is dangerous, is a lesson learned only for the individual. But what I have learned from suffering is what unites us as travellers on the road of excess and grants us entry to the palace of wisdom. Pain without suffering is like victory without struggle. One is meaningless without the other. But in the final analysis, real suffering can only be measured by what is taken away from us."
"Then we are suffering now," said Verosian, "for our beloved lord is lost to us."
Lucius turned away from Verosian's mawkish sentimentality and frowned as he looked upon the ruination of Fulgrim's foot. The flesh had been burned away, yet it appeared as though a thin, translucent film was forming over the bone, which had begun to lose the solid, vitrified look that had been burned onto it. Like a snake that had recently shed its skin, the filmy texture of Fulgrim's foot was oily and new, raw and yet to assume its final form.
"Look," said Lucius, "he's healing. You have to keep up the pressure."
Fabius transferred his gaze from Fulgrim's face to his healing foot with academic interest, while Caeseron and Verosian each took up an instrument of excruciation. The battle captains took position either side of Fulgrim and turned their devices upon the bound Primarch. Caeseron crushed knuckles with crimping pliers, while Verosian worked a flesh plane across Fulgrim's chest, peeling back long strips of skin with each caress.
"'Ah!' grinned Fulgrim. "'Truly the burden of happiness can only be removed by the balm of suffering.'
Lucius smelled Fulgrim's blood and longed to take up an awl or hammer, but the look in the Primarch's eyes stayed his hand. The tortures inflicted by Caeseron and Verusian would have reduced a mortal to frothing madness, but Fulgrim appeared to be enjoying the experience. Their eyes met, and Fulgrim said,
"'Go on, Lucius. Take up one of Fabius's devices. Make my flesh scream.'
Lucius shook his head and crossed his arms, for fear that he might do as Fulgrim wished.
"'Are you sure?' smiled Fulgrim. "'You know better than these fools that it's the temptations you don't succumb to you'll later regret.'
"'True enough.' But I think that any creature powerful enough to take control of Fulgrim's body is powerful enough to endure any amount of pain and suffering without real effort.
How insightful of you, my son, said Fulgrim. This is mildly diverting, I will admit, but pain to me is no more than an irritant. The pain you can inflict, anyway.
Caeseron paused in his mutilations and looked up at Fabius.
"'Is it speaking the truth?'
Fabius circled the gurney, reading the signs of Fulgrim's biorhythms with increasing puzzlement. Lucius was no apothecary, but even he could see the readouts confirmed that they might as well have been reciting poetry for all the effect it was having on the Primarch. Verusian hurled away his flesh plane, and a glass cylinder mounted in a shadowed alcove shattered. Noxious fluid spilled onto the floor of the apothecarian, smoking like acid and bearing an unidentifiable mass of pulsating organs grafted to a vaguely humanoid host. Whatever it was, its convulsions lasted only a moment before its wretched existence was ended. Fabius knelt beside the glistening remains and shot a poisonous glance at Verusian. Marius ignored the apothecary's anger and took hold of Fulgrim's head, leaning down as though to kiss him. Instead, he slammed Fulgrim's head down on the gurney and loosed a howl of grief-stricken rage that sent Lucius and Caeseron flying. The sound reverberated around the chamber like the sonic boom of a low-flying stormbird, shattering every piece of glass in the room. Broken shards tumbled to the tiles in a thousand sharp tinks.
"'You are a creature of evil!' yelled Verusian. "'Begone, or I will tear the head of this body from its shoulders. I would see Fulgrim dead before allowing you to possess it a moment longer.'
Lucius picked himself up, his senses reeling from the oral assault as Fabius launched himself at Verusian and hauled him away from Fulgrim.
"'Fool!'
cursed Fabius.
"'Your careless anger!' has just ruined months of experimentation.
Verusian shrugged off the apothecary's anger and balled a fist, ready to pound Fabius to pulped blood and bone.
Marius,
shouted Fulgrim,
stay your hand.
Decades of ingrained loyalty froze Marius Verusian to immobility, and Lucius was reminded of the iron grip of innate authority possessed by the Primarchs. Even he, no respecter of authority, felt himself cowed by the Primarch's words.
"'You call me evil, but how do you decide what is good and what is evil? Are they not simply arbitrary terms coined by man to justify his actions?' said Fulgrim. "'Think of how one measures good and evil, and you will see that what I am becoming, is a thing of perfect beauty, a thing of goodness.
Lucius approached the steel slab and looked down upon the Primarch, sensing that his words were profound on a level he could not yet understand, but upon which his future might depend. He lifted an awl with a long hooked tip and worked it into Fulgrim's chest, through scar tissue that had not fully healed. Fulgrim grimaced as the metal pierced his flesh, but Lucius couldn't decide on the emotion behind the Primarch's expression.
"'So, what are you becoming?' he asked.
"'You ask the wrong question,'
answered Fulgrim, as Lucius worked the awl into him, inch by steel inch.
"Then what's the right one?"
Marius and Julius leaned in as Fabius spat curses at the months of lost work that swilled and throffed around his feet.
"The right question is, what does the universe move towards? And that can only be answered by understanding where we came from."
Marius followed Lucius's example and selected an instrument of torture from the collection of devices Fabius had laid out. He turned the pear-shaped device around in his hands, twisting a metal cog handle that gradually spread the leaves of the pear apart. Satisfied, he returned it to its original shape and moved down the gurney to place the device between the Primarch's legs.
"We come from Terra," said Marius. "Is that what you mean?"
Fulgrim smiled indulgently and said, "No, Marius.
Further back than that. As far back as it is possible to go."
Marius shrugged and worked his device into position with a series of grunts as Julius lifted a series of silver wands, some long, some short, but all tapered to sharpness at one end. One by one, Caeseron pierced Fulgrim's body with seven needle-tipped wands, running in a line from the crown of his head to his groin. It was clear Caeseron was no stranger to the apparatus, as he attended to his work with a craftsman's diligence. Lucius wondered if he had chosen poorly in comparison to these instruments of agony, but decided that he liked the simplicity of the awl, as he pressed it deeper into Fulgrim's unknown organs and inhuman biology. Fulgrim watched Caeseron with the attention of a proud master watching his student take flight for the first time without instruction. The Primarch shook his head as Caeseron stood erect and said,
"Your positioning of the Swadhisthana chakra needle is slightly off, Julius. Perhaps due to the intrusion of Marius's implement, a little higher might be better."
Caeseron bent to check and readjusted the needle as he saw that Fulgrim was correct. Without a word of acknowledgement, he ran a series of copper wires from the end of each needle to a thrumming bank of generators. With a flick of the switch, a deep bass note of power filled the chamber, and arcing sparks of high-voltage energy hummed from the wires. Fulgrim's jaw clenched, and caged lightning danced in the black vortices of his eyes. His skin darkened, and Lucius smelled the electric tang of a body burning from the inside out. Enduring enough pain to last innumerable mortal lifetimes, Fulgrim resumed speaking.
"This universe began in simplicity, with an event of such rapid expansion that it cannot ever be measured. In the first fractional moments of its existence, the universe was a place of such staggering simplicity that we cannot even begin to imagine it. But over time, those simple elements began to cohere, to come together in ever more complex forms. Particles became atoms, and atoms became molecules, until they grew in complexity to form the first stars. Those newly birthed stars lived and died over millions of years, and their explosive deaths fueled the birth of yet more stars and planets. You and I, we are luminous beings, fashioned from the hearts of stars."
"Poetic, but what does that have to do with good and evil?"
asked Caeseron, as he manipulated the current through the silver needles, intrigued despite himself. Lucius was surprised, for he had always thought the first captain had little interest in anything other than the gratification of his own desires, or how he could wreak the greatest pain upon an enemy.
"I'm getting to that," promised Fulgrim.
And Lucius had to remind himself that they were in the midst of torturing him and had not come to listen to a lecture on the substance of the universe. He wanted to speak out, but Fulgrim's words held him fast.
"None of this coming together is random," explained Fulgrim. "It is all part of the universe's nature, its tendency towards complexity." "Ah, yes. That is most exquisite, Marius. Another turn of the screw.
Now, as I was saying, all things are part of this cycle of building and coming together, from the lowliest organism to the highest functioning sentience. Given the right circumstances, everything will tend towards becoming something more beautiful, more perfect, and more complex. It has been this way since the beginning of this universe's lifespan, and that nature is as inescapable as it is inevitable.
Lucius nodded and turned the awl in a wide circle within Fulgrim's body.
And where does this all lead? What lies at the end of this journey from simplicity to complexity?
Fulgrim shrugged, though it was impossible to tell whether it was a conscious gesture or the result of the current broiling his bones.
Who can say? Some have called it godhood, others nirvana. For want of a better term, I call it perfect complexity. It is the ultimate aim of all things, whether they are aware of their role in the universe or not. Now, the question of good and evil is inextricably linked to this ongoing journey to perfect complexity, and the answer is simple.
Fulgrim's words trailed off as his back arched and a line of blood ran from the corner of his mouth. Lucius wanted to believe it was his penetrative awl pricking Fulgrim's spine that was the cause of the pain, but with all three warriors working their excruciating arts, it was impossible to be sure. Fabius circled the gurney, monitoring Fulgrim's vital signs with growing alarm.
"You're killing him," he said urgently. "One of you must stop."
"No," said Marius. "The pain will drive the demon thing out. It will relinquish its hold on Fulgrim before it allows itself to die."
"Simpleton," snapped Fabius. "Do you think such things as demons fear the destruction of their mortal hosts? Its essence will simply cohere in the warp once you have destroyed the physical vessel."
"Then what are we doing here?"
demanded Lucius, releasing his grip on the awl and taking hold of Fabius by the throat as he again sensed conspiracy to the apothecary's solicitousness towards Fulgrim. Lucius tightened his grip on the apothecary's windpipe, exerting enough pressure to make the man's eyes bulge.
"You cannot harm this demon,"
gasped Fabius.
"But if you can cause it enough pain, it might be possible to force it to release its hold."
"Might. Possible," said Caeseron. "You speak without certitude in all you say."
Lucius felt a sharp pressure at his groin and looked down to see a coiling armature of rusted metal and sinewy gristle protruding from the skinned meat coat of Fabius. A hypodermic filled with cloudy pink fluid had pierced the flexible joint at his thigh, and the needle was buried an inch into the meat of his leg. Fabius gave a viper's grin and said,
"Lay a hand on me again, and the injector will have filled you with enough Vitae Noctis to slay a battle company."
Lucius released the apothecary, only with great reluctance, feeling the cold metal of the needle withdraw from his body. As much as he wanted to lash out and break Fabius's neck, he couldn't keep the grin of near death from his face. Fabius saw the grin and said,
"It is always amusing until the elixir hits your system. Then it is sublime for 6 heartbeats. Then you are dead, and the world of sensation is over. Remember that the next time you feel the need to vent your anger upon me."
Caeseron pushed them apart and said,
"Enough. We have a task at hand. Apothecary, can we drive this demon out with pain? And give me a straight answer."
Fabius answered without taking his eyes from Lucius, and Lucius met his hostility with a calm insouciance he felt sure would irritate the apothecary.
"I cannot," said Fabius. "Any mortal body would be destroyed long before we could ever reach the point where a demon would lose its grip. But a Primarch's body should survive long enough for us to reach a tipping point where the pain will be sufficient to drive it out." Then perhaps the time has come to use the neural parasite device, said Marius. The thing you crafted from the Diasporex hybrid captains.
Fabius nodded in agreement, and Lucius saw the apothecary had been waiting for just such an opportunity. Bending low, he placed the half-helm upon Fulgrim's skull and attached thin lengths of clear plastic tubing to the silvered metal. The tubing coiled across the floor to a humming machine that looked to have been designed by creatures that bore no relation to humanity. It pulsed with a complex series of lights and sounds that existed in realms beyond the auditory perceptions of mortals, and Lucius watched as the iridescent mercury-like liquid pulsed eagerly along the clear tubing and into the Primarch.
"This had better work,"
said Caeseron, jabbing Fabius in the chest.
"If you have spoken false, none of your fetid elixirs will stop me from killing you."
The sparkling liquid entered Fulgrim's body, and the gasp of a sensualist, who has at last discovered some sensation as yet unimagined, escaped his full lips. Fulgrim's eyes snapped open, and he looked about himself like a dreamer, awakening from golden memories of half-remembered friends and old loves.
"Ah, my sons,"
he said, as though the pain of his torture was little more than the gentle caresses of butterfly wings.
"Where was I?"
Blood sheened his flesh like a crimson gown, and the sharp tang of roasting meat oozed from his every orifice. Heat radiated along the silver needles jutting from his body, and his pelvis was bent up at an unnatural angle by the expansion of the macabre device of Marius.
"You were talking of good and evil," said Lucius, taking hold of the plain wooden handle of his awl and pushing it in deeper.
"Oh, you wield that spike like a master craftsman," said Fulgrim. "You are as skilled with a smaller weapon as you are with a larger."
"I practice,"
answered Lucius.
"I know," said Fulgrim. "Is it working?"
Caeseron asked Fabius, as he manipulated holographic dials and liquid gauges with subdermal xenohaptics.
"It is," confirmed the apothecary. "I can alter the biochemistry of his mind to see what I want him to see, feel what I want him to feel. His mind will be ours to command soon."
Fulgrim laughed, then burst into tears, his body convulsing in agony before shuddering with the greatest pleasure. He screamed at invisible terrors and licked his lips as flavors beyond imaging flooded his sensory perceptions.
"What is happening to him?"
said Marius.
"I am assuming control,"
said Fabius, clearly relishing this chance to manipulate so magnificent a physical specimen of supra-engineered perfection.
"His mind is more complex than you can possibly imagine. A million labyrinths twisted within one another. It is no small matter to learn its connections."
"Master it swiftly,"
ordered Caeseron. Fabius ignored the threat in Caeseron's voice and made myriad alterations to the composition of the liquid and the operation of the machine. Too complex to follow, Lucius had no idea what the apothecary was changing or how it might affect the Primarch. Every vein on Fulgrim's body stood taut on the surface of the skin, and it was clear the Primarch wasn't allowing Fabius to take control without a fight. A thousand emotions and sensations warred across Fulgrim's face, and Lucius envied him the touch of Fabius's machine. What might it be like to allow another's hand to guide his mind through a universe of sensation? But just as quickly as he imagined such a journey, he knew he was too self-absorbed to allow anyone else to take control of his flesh. At last, Fulgrim's body relaxed, sinking back onto the gurney with a contented sigh of relief. His limbs settled on the cold metal, and Fabius gave a triumphant grin that exposed his yellowed teeth and glistening serpentine tongue.
"I have him," he said. "What would you have me do, first captain?"
"Can you force it to speak truthfully?"
"Of course. A manipulation of no consequence,"
Fabius told him. Lucius frowned at the swiftness of Fabius's assurance, wondering at the ease with which the apothecary appeared to have mastered what he had described as being nigh impossibly difficult. He slid the awl clear of Fulgrim's body and moved around the gurney to stand next to Fabius. Vitae Noctis or not, he would kill Fabius if it emerged that he was lying to them. The faces on the apothecary's long coat flexed as though rising and falling on a gelid tide, and their mute howls implored Lucius to end their suffering. The swordsman ignored them, calculating where best to stab with the awl if he needed to kill Fabius. The apothecary seemed oblivious to Lucius's presence, and worked his fingers over the alien device like a maestro at the keyboard of a templum organ. Fulgrim danced a jig on the gurney, and his face twisted into a delirious smile as he felt what was being done to him.
"Oh, my sons," breathed the Primarch. "You want the truth? How artless of you. Do you not realize that the truth is the most dangerous thing of all?"
"Your time here is at an end, demon," snarled Marius. "You have no place among our legion. You are a thing of evil."
Fulgrim laughed and said, "Oh, Marius, you insist on calling me a thing of evil, but such a word is meaningless unless you understand the truth of what good and evil represent. Very well. You wish the truth? I will give it to you. If you accept that the universe is constantly moving towards its final state of perfect complexity, and that this is its inevitable destination, then anything that hinders this process must be defined as evil. By the same logic, anything that promotes this ongoing journey is surely good. I am moving towards that perfect complexity, and by hindering my ascension, you are acting in the cause of evil. Alone in this chamber, I am the only thing that is good."
"You seek to dull our wits with absurd talk of the nature of the universe and good and evil," hissed Marius. "I know evil, and I am looking at it."
"You are looking at yourself, Marius Ferozian," said Fulgrim. "Have you not seen the truth of it yet?"
"The truth of what?"
"The truth of me."
Lucius stepped away from the gurney as Fulgrim's biceps swelled with sudden power and his right arm tore free of the restraints that bound him to the gurney. An instant later, his left arm was free, and the Primarch sat bolt upright, tearing loose the needles piercing his skin and ripping free the biomonitors Fabius had attached at the beginning of their tortures. Fulgrim kicked Marius away and tore loose the opened device the third captain had worked upon with a sigh of regret. It fell to the floor of the apothecarian with a wet clatter and rolled like a viscous flower of red-stained iron.
"A pity," said Fulgrim.
"I was beginning to enjoy that."
The Primarch swung his legs from the gurney, breaking the bonds securing his ankles and thighs with no more effort than a child might throw back its blankets upon waking. Julius Caseron lunged forwards to hold Fulgrim down, but he was swatted aside with a casual backhanded gesture. Fabius backed away, but Lucius stood his ground, knowing there would be no point in running. He saw how blinded they had been, how naive. How could they have believed that they had the power to subdue a Primarch? They had succeeded only because Fulgrim had desired it, had wanted them to come to this point. The Phoenician had seen the doubts in his warriors and had led them to this place, to this moment, in order to reveal his true nature. Fulgrim turned to face him and smiled. In that instant, Lucius saw the truth of everything Fulgrim had said and done since Istvan. He saw recognition in Fulgrim's eyes and dropped to his knees.
"Begging, Lucius?" said Fulgrim.
"I expected better from you."
"Not begging, my lord,"
answered Lucius with his head bowed.
"Honouring."
Julius Caseron struggled to his feet, his fist bursting to life with shimmering arcs of purple lightning. Marius Verosian swept up his sonic cannon, his mouth widening in preparation of unleashing a barrage of sound and force that would kill everything in the room.
"You know now," said Fulgrim.
"I know," agreed Lucius.
I should have always known you would never surrender your will to another. If I would not, why should you?
What is he talking about, swordsman?
Demanded Caceron.
Have you betrayed us to this demon thing?
Lucius shook his head and chuckled at Caceron's blindness to a truth that was now surely self-evident.
No, he said. I have not, for I was wrong.
About what?
Said Caceron, fist raised to strike.
About me,
said Fulgrim, answering for him.
This is Lord Fulgrim, said Lucius. Our Lord Fulgrim.